Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The Swiss-hosted Ukraine peace conference was an abject failure. It failed because the issue of peace was not on the agenda. They did everything they could to escalate and prolong the conflict. Meanwhile, Moscow has its own plans to see an end to the fighting. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest Nikolai Petro in Kingston. He's a professor of political science at the University of Rhode Island. In Brussels, we have Luc Rivet. He is an independent journalist. And in Basel, we cross to Andriy Tylyushenko. He is a former Ukrainian diplomat. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Nikolai, let me go to you first here, because we've had a lot of events happening very, very quickly. Let's take a look at the end of last week when we had President Putin addressing Russia's diplomats and sending very clearly messages about how a negotiated end to this conflict could start, at least the beginning of negotiations. We have to parse that there. And then, of course, we had the media coverage of the Swiss so-called peace initiative by Ukraine. I think, you know, when I look at that, all of its in its entirety, its totality, we had Russia, and I can see how the Ukrainians would disagree with what Putin had to say, but it at least was a starting point. What we got over the weekend was no starting point at all. It was just more of a propaganda effort to prolong the conflict and to give the appearance that it had some kind of global consensus. Your thoughts over the last week or so? Go ahead.
I think you're right to call the designation of peace summit into question, because, again, how can you have a peace negotiation without the major people involved in the conflict? So what it turns out to be is essentially a grouping to put pressure on Russia, and that has, in that sense, it really didn't move the process forward any, and then came Putin's talk to the international diplomats, and I think, to be fair, somewhat eclipsed the Swiss summit, because at the end of the Russian, as a result of what Putin said, three things happened to move the peace process forward. If that is the desired objective, if peace is the desired objective rather than victory.
Right.
So one is Putin clearly simplified the negotiating process. We went down from Ukraine's 10 points to Putin's 1 point. And there's only 1 point that became mandatory. And that is an official statement that Ukraine does not intend to join NATO. So the second thing that his initiative accomplished is to offer something that Ukraine is not offering, and that is to end the bloodshed now. And that is done simply by withdrawing the troops, separating the troops. And I would highlight something that hasn't been typically highlighted, that there are, in Putin's proposal, no initial concessions required. It's simply to get to the negotiating table.
Yes.
Let's withdraw the troops, stop the bloodshed. We do, however, want this commitment on good faith to not join NATO. And I guess the third point, which is more of a public relations coup, I would say, for Putin, is that his proposal put the lie to the frequent Western statements that Russia intends to conquer all of Ukraine and from there move on into Europe, because in effect, Russia has defined explicitly its territorial objectives, the four occupied which are the four occupied territories.
Well, it's interesting, Luke. It's in watching the coverage of the so-called peace conference, its shelf life has been remarkably short. I mean, for the reasons that Nikolai just presented to us, because there's a fuller picture out there. You know, I see with every passing day, another country takes their name off of the communique at the end of the conference here, and even you have the Ukrainian foreign minister saying, basically, maybe next time we should invite the Russians. sanctions. I mean, the whole thing turned out to be a complete waste of time. And it didn't help Ukraine at all. I don't see how it moved the needle for Ukraine whatsoever. So it was a real bust that way. And I agree with Nikolai. I mean, if you look at the broader picture here, there is something to start negotiating, but it's not coming from the Ukrainian / NATO side. Go ahead, Luke.
Well, I think, as you say, that it's the beginning of the end for Ukraine. This conference shows clearly that the support is dwindling among the supposed partners. I mean, Macron arrived late at the summit and he left early. Biden didn't even come, et cetera, et cetera. At the same time, Zelensky went to the Bundestag in Berlin and to the Assemblée Nationale in Paris. And there was nobody to listen to him, or very few. The left and the right were totally absent, and the center, Macron's center, for example, were very scarce. It was a very scarce audience. That clearly, and of course, the BRICS did not accept any of the conclusions of Zelensky. So, what was the purpose of this thing? It doesn't work, Mr. Zelensky.
You know, Andrei, one of the things, you know, I look at a lot of commentary, and to be honest with you, commentary that I tend to agree with, okay? But they talk about the beginning of the end of Ukraine. I don't want to see the end of Ukraine at all. I want to see the end of this senseless war. And so what does it take? And I've always wanted to ask a Ukrainian diplomat, you know, they used the phrase, you know, Ukraine is a victim. But if you look at Zelensky and the people that he surrounded himself with, they volunteered for this. Why do they have the right to keep volunteering young Ukrainian men to go into a meat grinder? Andrei.
Yeah, you're totally correct. Zelensky came into this when he ran for president on a peace deal, that he's going to make peace with the devil himself. There was a plan. I worked with Zelensky's team while he was going for presidency. There was a plan for Zelensky to come to Donbass and make a speech 2 weeks later after his inauguration to the people of Donbass, together with the Russian Federation, knowledge that these are Ukrainian people and we should get the Minsk Accords on track, the ones the Ukrainians signed, and have peace in Ukraine and have autonomy for the eastern parts of Ukraine and have Ukraine back together without the civil war. But it all went apart when basically Zelensky went under the Anglo-Saxon regime and in the West, and he agreed to this war. He agreed to this war 2 years before the war even started. He was preparing for this war. Money was stolen, everything was being prepared. The Minsk Accord were moved aside. We remember that process, even though Russia negotiated this whole issue to move peace forward. And I, as a Ukrainian, I spoke about peace for years and years before even this war was happening, while there was civil war in Donbass. Nobody listened. We had the opposition channels, though, that spoke about peace. We had people who spoke about peace putting on kill lists and being killed in Ukraine. This is what the Zelensky regime and Ukraine government went into. Today, I believe, as a Ukrainian, that Zelensky is not a legitimate president under Article 103. There's no legitimate government in Ukraine. And until this time, Ukraine needs to change. If Ukraine wants peace, it doesn't need to go by the narrative of the warmongers in Washington and in London. It needs to decide by its own, have a sovereign decision and say, look, for Zelensky, for example, or his regime, we will move away, we will sign the agreements, we will move away, we'll have a new government in Ukraine and have the Ukrainians decide what they want, what government they want, a peace government or a war government. I believe you, the Ukrainians on the ground, will vote for peace, because more and more Ukrainians today are looking in for a peace deal with Russia. They understand that there's no way out. Ukraine already is losing and lost before even the war began.
Exactly. It was determined on the first day. Nikolai, I mean, in looking again at Putin's speech to the diplomatic community, which gets so little coverage in the West, it's really appalling considering the stakes. I don't see any more real patience, the strategic patience that we've seen over the last 2.5 years. I think the Russian authorities know that there is no good faith in the West. This conference proved it, and that they may start pushing a lot harder. And again, given the environment, you know, NATO is saying it's going to have 500,000 men that'll be war radiated, and we're talking about activating nuclear strategies and all of that. This is going to get very ugly very quickly. I'm very worried about that. Nikolai.
Well, diplomacy involves a lot of posturing. And then the posturing is exaggerated by the media. You know, there's an old Austrian saying that how do wars start? Politicians lie to journalists and then believe what they read in the newspapers. Well, it's gotten so much worse now with the internet. It's literally impossible to know what is true and what is not, because respectable figures, or people that we are told are informed and respectable, say absolutely contradictory things. So that leaves me as an observer to suspect that if anything is going to happen, it's going to happen outside of the public eye. And here we can simply speculate. I do think it is likely that there are all sorts of private contacts between Ukrainian military officials and Russian military officials, you know, of course, to work out details about prisoner exchanges and things like that. But, you know, discussions go on. One thing leads to another. They try to feel each other out. There's all sorts of discussions among the diplomatic community, some of which gets leaked to the press.
Yeah, but Nikolai, I agree with you. We're rapidly coming to the break. But I mean, do they have enough agency to make decisions? Again, you know, this seems like, you know, this is the Ukraine project run out of London, Brussels, and Washington.
They do if they want to, and what is interesting about the recent spate of firings of senior political officials in Kyiv is that some people in the West are interpreting that as a way for Zelensky to try to give himself a little more maneuverability by
firing
people.
All right, hold that thought, Nikolai, because that's fascinating. We have to go to a hard break, gentlemen, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT.
Forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence or its own existence.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Luke, over the weekend, we had Foreign Minister Lavrov speaking to media, and he did it this time in English. And he brought up, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, how this is an elite project in the West, this Ukraine project. And what about the democratic processes in Europe and the United States? I mean, as you well know, there were European elections here. And the issue of Ukraine, if it was mentioned at all, it was not a vote getter. It was a vote vote loser. We have the governments of France and Germany in a tailspin because of the election outcome. Even though the UK is no longer part of the European Union, they're having to pay the cost as well for their interests over the, in Ukraine over their own people. How does this play into it? We have this farcical peace conference, and we have, you know, Europe in revolt. Go ahead, Luke.
Well, the problem for the moment in Europe is that every party on the left or on the right, especially on the right, that supported Russia or that had the same views as Russia on many options or on ceasefire, they keep silent because they are afraid of the global mood in the West. We are bombarded by a press which is really supporting Ukraine permanently, following the politicians in power, following the elites who are supporting the government of Zelensky. They cannot turn back anymore. And so the people aren't really aware of what happens. And Ukraine was not really a topic during the European elections, not much. Everybody tried to avoid it, you know, and to tiptoe out of the room if anybody talked about Ukraine. What is the danger for the coming month and years is the fact that probably the replacement of Josep Borrell, the high representative of Europe for foreign affairs, will be replaced by Kaja Kallas, the Estonian prime minister.
Oh, great. Was, oh, wonderful.
Really a passionaria for Ukraine.
Wonderful.
So
okay.
That is a danger. You know, this woman could create real havoc in the European Commission with her views.
Well, I mean, of course, you know, they talk a lot about Ukraine, but it doesn't really help Ukraine. Andrei, you know, as this conflict goes forward here, how much do people in Ukraine have an input in this here? Because I am very cynical about this whole project, because I think any realist person thinking realistically that this conflict is going to end, it's not going to end in Ukraine's favor. But those in Kiev, that have power, they just want to keep this going. I mean, it's very profitable for them. I mean, how many of them already have homes in Miami and in Tel Aviv and bank accounts? You know, I think my cynicism is warranted, because that is one reason to keep the conflict going. Of course, Joe Biden doesn't want to admit it was a mistake. Joseph Borrell doesn't want to admit it was a mistake. Nobody in the European Union in power wants to admit this. So it's kind of inertia going on. The money just keeps flowing. Andrei.
Yeah, basically, these people are all owned. Zelensky is owned by Washington, London. Washington, London is owned by the military industrial complex and the deep state. There's no sovereign leader in all these groups, and even all the G7 meetings that were happening, all those leaders are all controlled by Washington or London. So the only sovereign leader in all this frame is Putin, who's talking about peace from his own perspective. And Ukraine, in this situation, is coming out of the perspective of Washington, unfortunately. And I have to say, there's no sovereignty in Ukraine. There's no independence. After the coup in 14, Ukraine totally lost it. Zelensky is holding on to power for as long as possible because he understands there's going to be a change, and it might be a change soon because the tensions of the people in Kyiv and Ukraine are growing. They hate the government. They cannot talk about it publicly. They're afraid, but they hate the government. The military hates the government. So the West will make a change within the government in Ukraine for one of their own, for the Poroshenko team. And they're going to change the Zelensky scene. This is what we're going to look forward to. So to lower the tensions in the people of Ukraine so they won't come with pitchforks on their own and try to topple the government and choose somebody independent. The West doesn't need this to happen at all. And that's what people in Ukraine are looking forward to. They're looking forward to a leader who they can trust to make a peace for them or to get out of this war in the best relationship for Ukraine as possible. I can tell you that the diplomatic corps in Ukraine has lost 60% of its diplomats because all of them stayed abroad. Nobody came back to Ukraine. 60% of the diplomatic corps in Ukraine is lost. There's no diplomacy. Kuleba is taking all these people away. He's not even asking them to come back because they are not looking for a diplomacy way out. They're looking for a way out with war because that's what the West wants them to be, because that's how they stay in power. Nobody's thinking about any Ukrainian on the ground. They're just pushing them to the bloodshed and to the graveyard. that's more than 700,000 Ukrainians have died or are injured throughout this process.
You know, Nikolai, what I worry about, I already made reference to it, but, you know, we had this quote-unquote peace conference. It didn't result in much. I mean, even look at the final communique. It was really watered down. It really didn't address the Zelensky peace proposal. But there's no willingness on the part of the West to relent here. They won't even go into negotiations. When the Russian government repeatedly say, you know, well, you know, maybe make my day, test us, you know, we want to negotiate. They won't even negotiate here. So the alternative is just to escalate. And I'm very, very worried that we're going to continue up the escalation ladder. And you know what? Russia keeps following them up.
That's the problem with escalation. I have had some very surreal conversations with American diplomats supporting Ukraine. They are now retired. But the impression that I get from talking to them is a certain calm about the prospect of Putin going beyond a certain level of threat. They don't think any nuclear weapons or any serious incursion into NATO is at all likely. Although they're not.
Nikolai, I have to stop you there. You know, serious. So what's a less than serious?
Meaning what?
Well, I mean, for example, the vaunted F-16s everyone's talking about. Well, they're not going to. Ukraine is not going to station those that aircraft inside of Ukraine. Okay, number one, the maintenance is enormous. Right. The runways are very sophisticated. These planes need to be landing, you know, on basically an ice skating rink. It has to be really, really flat. So they're going to station them in Romania and Poland. Why would Russia refrain from destroying those airfields?
Because of a reluctance of Russia to escalate the matter, which turns basically gives the initiative over to NATO. I think what we're likely to see is a number of air skirmishes over Ukraine. And if those should for some reason not go well for Russia, then I think the military options expand. But I suspect that at least initially Russia expects to do well in these conflicts. And again, we have historical precedent. We have fighter jets from Russia in the North Korean War and China and in Vietnam. So again, there is historical precedent and we don't need to expect always the worst scenario.
Yeah, but Nikolai, doesn't it really, I find it really astounding. I mean, I think you should too, is that there's a hypothetical, well, we might get into air skirmishes. Well, you know where that leads. It goes to greater escalation. I mean, nobody says, oh, we won't use planes here. That wasn't a good, nobody, no, we have to bring more planes in. We have to escalate even more.
The problem is the path that we're on right now. And there's only one track. It's the war track in the West right now. What we need is to activate a diplomacy track, but the forces in the West, the political forces, are not strong enough to do so. And therefore, probably the global South, as it's now called, needs to become much more insistent on promoting diplomacy as a solution.
Well, Luke, I mean, how many young men in the European Union want to put on a uniform and go fight in Ukraine?
I would say nobody.
I would say nobody, too.
And the Baltics, probably you would find people in Poland, the Baltics, to believe what NATO is saying. But for the rest, young men don't want to go to war on the Ukrainian issue. Absolutely not. Nowhere. From Spain to Sweden or Finland, even Finland, nobody wants a war with Russia. That's the feelings of the people, really, you know. And even the governments, when they say, for example, Belgium, I'm in Brussels now, in Belgium, they said, we're going to give all our F-16. They will give two by the end of this year, and the rest will come probably closer to 2028. Well, by then, the conflict will be finished, of course. And they know it. So they just put the brake on the whole issue. They tried to find some money to send to Ukraine to pay for their civil servants.
All right, Luke, we're rapidly running out of time, and I want to give the last minute of the program to Andrei. Go ahead, Andrei.
Pierre, today we have to talk about finishing the war, and I agree with everybody here. There has to be, the West has to make a call. It has to be a call from the White House, from the Biden administration, from Biden himself, to Putin, and say, look, let's start negotiating. And then this conflict would end. Ukraine on its own will not be able to do that. Europe has not the ability to do this. Only Washington, the one who started this war and fueling this war for Ukraine, can end this conflict by calling Putin an enemy. But he will not do that because the elections are coming. Because if Biden will do this before the elections, he's done. It's over for him. So they're going to wait out until the elections and put more Ukrainian and Russian lives into the ground.
Well, you know, Andrei, I think it's really important to remember, because people, you know, we've had this debate, Ukraine's going to the West, Ukraine's staying in the East. Ukraine is right where it is, and it isn't going anywhere. And we should save that country and as many people as possible. That should be it. End the war. Pursue peace. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Kingston, Basel, and in Brussels. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, cross that rules.